Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. John Couch on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our show on this Wednesday, midweek edition, June 3rd, 2020, where we are practicing our safe distancing, keeping everybody 6 feet apart and then some, while bringing people together from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We're on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening. Anywhere in the world, you can hear our program. Just log on to buckmastershow.com. And we piggyback with KVOI.com to give you the live stream. All of our podcasts are available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. The live line number 790-2040. The first Wednesday of the month, we bring in Tucson City Councilman Ward 6 Democrat Steve Kasachek to join us. And it is the first Wednesday of the month. So we go now on the live line to Councilman Kasachek. How are you today?
Couldn't be better. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you for asking. Councilman, all of us believe in the right to peacefully protest, but when the protests turn to violence, that's when folks draw a line in the sand. Would it have been helpful for the Tucson City Council to speak with one voice via some kind of a resolution condemning Friday night's vandalism and property damage in downtown Tucson?
Well, yeah, Nikki Lee and I did send out a release. Part of the problem is that we don't meet every day. Mm-hmm. We meet every 2 weeks, and in this case, 3 weeks. When the George Floyd incident happened, Nikki and I penned a release that, in essence, it said one viewing of that video should have instantly resulted in the indictment of all four of those men on charges up to and including murder. We are now over a week into this, and one of the four has been charged. The other three still have not. Anybody looking at that video has to conclude that all three of the other ones were accomplices in it. Somebody should have pushed that guy off from Mr. Floyd 1 minute into the incident, not waiting for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I don't know if the council passing a resolution would have quelled the concern. This is pent-up frustration, not simply from George Floyd, but in the last month or so, we've seen three. We saw a young man out jogging. We saw a police officer shot in her own home. We see this again and again. And the community, not just the black community, but the community writ large, is just done with it. And I'm not condoning the violence. I was downtown on Saturday morning with my staff, and we were putting up plywood and painting the Be Kind flowers on the plywood that we were putting up. We were cleaning up glass. 100% the protesters have a right under the First Amendment to protest, and they have a right just because they're pissed off and they're tired of this stuff the way the rest of us are. But the message is local businesses are not the enemy, and don't take it out on them. So many of these local businesses, they're minority owned, they're women owned, they're just small local entrepreneurs who, by the way, haven't had customers in 3 months. They haven't had product in 3 months. They've been selling restaurant product off of the street corner instead of having people come into their dining rooms. We can't be punishing the small local businesses in this community over a social injustice that, quite frankly, has been going on for my entire lifetime. But for no time in that period of time has the business community been complicit in it. This is something that I don't know that a city council resolution would have helped. Nikki and I wrote what we wrote, and the Saturday morning after the Friday last weekend, we were out, my staff and I were out, helping pick up the pieces. There were some awfully ticked off business owners out there on Congress and on Broadway trying to pick up the pieces. And a lot of them, Bill, are as you know, because you go out looking for advertising dollars. And, mm-hmm. and a lot of them are saying, I'm guessing they're saying, I can't afford it. And I'm guessing you're cutting rates and you're trying to help them along too. And so the last thing they needed was some guy walking up to their storefront and putting a baseball bat through their window. That is wrong on every level. But the George Floyd thing is just exacerbating a pent up frustration that is just. God, how many times do we need to see this?
It's such a darn shame for these downtown business folks, some of them getting ready, who were getting ready. Some of our well-known restaurants were ready to open their doors again. And it's just one more thing that they're going to have to deal with. And then, as Steve Kasachek, you and I both know, then there's the perception that some people will feel now, well, I guess it's not safe to go downtown. This is a tough situation.
Fourth Avenue, downtown, Main Gate. You're exactly right. Janos was out. The Schwabies were out. I called Scott Styler, who owns Playground and AC Marriott. He's up in San Fran, asking him if we could help with the plywood on their windows. They are all concerned that the perception becomes the reality. And they, as you say, you know, the Charo Steakhouse, they were getting ready to open.
Mm-hmm.
I put five pieces of plywood up on broken windows and proactively did some more for them on Saturday. It's just, by the way, a minority-owned business that's been in this community for decades, and they're a subject to this. People who were doing this because they felt that would make a legitimate statement on behalf of George Floyd and his family and the injustices that we see. It was just some punk-ass kid putting a baseball bat through a window because he thought it would be cool. And so, yeah, our business community downtown has been struggling, and many of them are minority-owned. All of them are arm in arm in opposition to what happened to Floyd and what continues to happen to young black men and women throughout this country. None of them deserved what happened on Friday night.
So do we have everything cleaned up? The damage I heard initially was $200,000 in glass and other issues. What is the assessment, Steve Kasachek?
Well, I don't know the dollar. Chris Magnus, Chief Magnus, pulled that number out as an estimate. I'm going to say it's going to be way north of that, and not just from the standpoint of broken glass and bent storefronts. I'm saying it's going to be way north of that because of what we're talking about. It's going to set back the ability of these business owners to reopen. Quite frankly, a reopening that was going to be very moderated anyway because of the social distancing and all the protocols that they were going to have to put into place, the hand sanitizer, the masks, and this, cutting the capacity down to 50% or less. Those cost money, too. And so it wasn't as though the businesses were going to open up to full capacity. They were already going to open up to reduced revenues and restrictions, and so that $200,000 number is just a drop in the bucket, because this is going to take a long time to not only clean up physically but to clean up fiscally for these businesses. And by the way, if we see as a result of Memorial Day all the people out partying and at Frog and Firkin and Dirtbags and all the bars around campus after the virtual graduation, if we see a resurgence from that, if we see a resurgence in COVID from the protesters and the tear gas and all that, then we're going to really be behind the eight ball, and this is going to take an even longer time to dig out from.
And I want to pick up on that because the COVID hospitalizations now have topped 1,000. There was a lot happening on that front. Steve Kasachek, stick around. We'll take our break right here. We'll be back with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek on the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. It's coming up on 12:14. We'll be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It is our midweek edition. We have Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, representing Ward Number 6, with us on the live line. There has definitely been a spike in the number of COVID cases in Arizona, the number of Arizonans hospitalized with positive or suspected cases shot past 1,000 on Monday. And this raises all sorts of questions about Governor Ducey, whether or not he abandoned the stay-at-home order too soon. Steve Kasachek, the city has their emergency order still in effect, I believe, that is through June 8th. Is that correct?
Yeah, but it's effectively preempted by what the governor did. He put out something near the end of the month that basically said we're going to open things back up, and state law preempts our local ordinance and our local resolution. But 2 days before, actually it was the day he lifted the stay at home, I wrote an op-ed that the Star ran that said it's absolutely the wrong thing to do. You know, I get the economics. I understand that this is a really tough balance, but science really is going to carry the day. And we can hope and pray and do all that we want to do in terms of saying we would love this thing to go away. It'll go away when science when it does. And so viruses do what they do. They look for an available target, and they infect it, and then they spread. And unfortunately, we are providing them lots of available targets these days. You know, you saw the video from Memorial Day. You know, people cramming onto beaches and people doing their, doing their Memorial Day party. And I get the fact that everybody's kind of stir crazy, and I've got cabin fever too. But the reality is that we don't need a vaccine. We need behavior in order to beat this thing. We can't wait for a vaccine. And so Ducey lifted the stay at home. I think it was too soon. My observation, this is just one guy's observation from wandering around, town, is that people are acting as though it's in the past, it's behind us. I walk past restaurants and bars on the way home and see them downtown before last weekend, and people are just acting as though life is normal again. And I'm really concerned that that we are going to see the reality of science, and that is the virus is going to reinfect, and then we could be back at where we were before. You know, we've got a university talking about trying to open up in August. Enrollment at the university is down 9%, but the revenue associated with that is down $92 million.
Wow,
that's a big deal.
I had not heard that number. 92 million down. Okay,
that
wow.
That's because of the mix of the kids coming in. Well, 57% of our tuition, the U of A's tuition revenue, comes from out-of-state undergrads and international students. They're not going to be coming back here from California or Illinois or Washington or Texas or China or India or Saudi Arabia. Those are big numbers. And if we see a resurgence in this, Bobby Robbins' hope to get that campus reopened could fall flat on its face. The same situation for city businesses. If Ducey's reopening of this thing was premature, and if people's behavior is irresponsible and they're gathering up in ways without the social distance, without the masks and all that, then we're going to see this hit us again. One thing that I think is interesting, though, is remember a month or so ago people were saying that the numbers, the infection rates will go down when the temperature starts to skyrocket.
Yeah.
What you just said indicates that that's not happening. It's 110 degrees outside right now, and the numbers are going up.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that could be a factor of everybody's inside with the air conditioning, and that's kind of a spreader of the COVID-19 too. So it's a tough situation. Steve, I want to ask you, realistically, the governor's not going to reimpose restrictions. So I'm thinking the June 8th, doesn't that keep certain parks and things closed here? I mean, what can the city do at this point realistically?
Well, my recommendation to Rahina, to the mayor, would be that we can keep parks closed. And everybody wants to go to the parks. I mean, this is really going to sound draconian, and no one's going to like to hear it, but I am concerned about a resurgence. And so I would recommend to Rahina that we do locally what we can do. The governor can open things back up until he puts another executive order in place that takes the decisions out of our hands again. Then we do have the local ability to do certain things, such as parks and rec facilities, access to city buildings, the telecommuting that lots of city workers are doing. So we're not without tools in our toolkit that we can implement. And to the extent that we have the local authority, I would say that we send the message to the governor that locally we're going to act, and unless and until he pulls that authority out of our hands, as he has done three times before now, we're going to act locally, because if people are concerned about the economic impact that we've already seen, they're going to really be concerned if this thing hits us again and we have to go into complete shutdown.
So what areas would that entail? Parks and rec, these limitations would continue beyond whatever extension is coming. What areas would be covered?
Right now, the city is planning on what's called a phase one reopening that will start on June the 9th, a week from yesterday, I guess, or today. Or
right.
It's a week away. That phase one reopening will open parks. It will open certain aquatic facilities. It will open the Ramadas again, you know, those kinds of things. And so we do have and it will also open up some city buildings, some city facilities. And so we have the ability to say, no, we're going to pause that. We're going to keep these restrictions in place right now because we're not sure that we can. In fact, I'll just tell you, I'm sure that we cannot count on people using those facilities in a responsible manner because you're seeing it in bars and restaurants already. You're seeing it on beaches all over the country. People just want to get together, and I get that. But if we have the responsibility to public health responsibility to keep things shut down just a bit longer to make sure that we're done with this or have it, at least have it under control, I think we should do that. We don't have enough testing going on, either the viral testing or the antibody testing. We do not have contact tracing protocols in place. We are seeing a resurgence in the infections, and that is going to cause some real concern with our hospital workers and, again, the bed capacity that up until now has been doing okay. But a part of that was because Ducey put a hold on the elective surgeries, so that he opened that back up. So all this is playing together. And we have a responsibility locally, I think, to do what we can to make sure that we're going to really pause this and go slowly and make sure that this doesn't hit us in the face again another 2 or 3 weeks. And that's how long it's going to take, because it takes a 7 to 10 day incubation period and then 3 or 4 days before the symptoms start manifesting. We could have thousands of people walking around this community right now who are just in the incubation stage, and they're asymptomatic vectors for this, and that's my concern.
So, and again, to clarify, you will be recommending, it is your recommendation to the mayor and council to delay the phase one reopening in the city of Tucson. Is that correct?
I think we need to pause it.
Even if it is 2 or 3 weeks, something in that time frame.
I wouldn't even put a...
Okay.
I wouldn't put a time frame on it. We need to watch the numbers. We get numbers all the time from the Pima County Health Department. I put them in my newsletter every week. One of the CDC criteria for taking your foot off the brake is 14 consecutive days of decreasing infection rates. We haven't seen anything close to that since this began back in March. Nothing even close to it. And now the numbers are going in even the wrong direction. So I'm going to rely on the guidance that we get from the data. And the data says too soon. And there is, frankly, there's a quite a contingent statewide of restaurants who are calling themselves Too Soon Arizona. And they're saying, don't put us back behind the eight ball where we were a month and a half ago by doing this too quickly.
All right. This is a concern, especially with the U of A. And I know they've got the President Robbins with this reopening plan. He is going to they actually have a news conference and an update with Dr. Carmona, who's kind of helping Dr. Robbins spearhead this. But this has to be a big concern. You mentioned out of state. The U of A depends so much on the California kids, don't they?
The top five states for us getting out-of-state students are California, Illinois, Washington, Texas, and Colorado. California tops the list by far. 44% of the U of A's tuition revenue comes from out-of-state, comes from non-resident undergrads. That's a big number. And, yeah, it is a big concern to him and to Dr. Carmona and to the people who are working this reentry we're simply not going to see the kids traveling here, and that's going to take a huge revenue hit for the campus and trying to reopen. As you know, the state has eviscerated the funding from a state level, and so the real concern is that the revenue for the U of A is going to be down significantly, and a large portion of that is from just what you just said, is that kids are not going to be traveling here either from out of state or internationally.
Are you delaying the opening of your Ward 6 conference room?
Yeah, we're not scheduling meetings in here until July. And even when we do, We've had groups, our from a physical standpoint, you know, fire occupancy and all that, we can fit 50, 75 people in these rooms. Right now, if you came into my office, you would see that I have the chairs socially distanced apart. We can fit 13 people in a room that once fit about 75. It's pretty amazing when you draw a 6-foot circle around a chair in all directions, not just front to back, how that really makes a room get small really quickly.
Very quickly. All right, Steve Kasachek, thank you very much for the time. We'll be looking forward to our next visit. Thanks a lot.
We always end on an up note.
Yes.
So my up note is going to be please support a local business, a local restaurant this weekend, and buy some takeout food. They need your help.
They certainly do. And hopefully, kudos certainly to everybody who helped try to help downtown after with the cleanup on Friday or Saturday morning. Thank you, Steve.
You bet. Take care.
All right. Steve Kasachek with us. We are at the midway point of the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. COVID-19 really hard hitting the agriculture community. That's next on the Buckmaster Show.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over 5 buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than 2 decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Speaking of our friends over at Green Things, so many people during the shutdown decided, you know, gardening would be a great hobby. Perhaps they'd done it in the past. Maybe they wanted to start growing their own vegetables. Well, Green Things is your headquarters for all the amazing plants, trees, annuals, and they can get you started on doing not only your home gardening, but kind of planting your own little garden for all of your vegetables. And they've got everything you need with all the proper nutrients, organic nutrients. They can take care of all of your questions. Check it out, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They're conveniently located. 3384 East River Road for Green Things. Speaking of Green Things, our contributor on agriculture is Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, professor at the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences since 1987. Jeff is currently the Associate Dean and Director for Extension and Economic Development, where he provides overall leadership and administrative and personnel management for the Arizona Cooperative Extension. He also serves as the Associate Director for the Arizona Experimental Station. Jeff, how are you, my friend?
I'm fine, Bill. Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you for asking. Let's begin with the big picture. The coronavirus really has put the Arizona agriculture community under a lot of strain, hasn't it, Jeff?
Yes, it certainly has. And it varies from sector to sector, but generally speaking, that's absolutely correct, Bill.
Where do we begin on this? Let's talk about perhaps, is it plummeting prices, lack of workers? What's the big threat right now to these growers' livelihoods?
Well, it's each of those. And like I say, it kind of depends on what sector of the Arizona ag economy we're looking into. You know, one of those that's probably most dramatic have been those folks that have been dependent on markets in the food service industry. And over the course of the past couple months, as the food service industry has closed down, of course, those markets dried up and shut off there as well. And it's difficult for a lot of farmers that have fresh produce coming to market and have that market cut off to find another direction. So what we saw, us as consumers, that is, would be the situation where there were times where you had limitations of some of the, we had higher demand in the grocery stores, but a guy who was a farmer who was supplying the food service industry faced a lot of difficulties and challenges of switching over into another marketplace, such, for example, into the grocery store chains and finding those routes of merchandising for their crop and their product. And so it left them hanging with the crop and no place to take it. So it really has been tough on those folks. There's been quite a growing industry like that in Arizona that is basically goes from field to table in the food service industry.
And we've seen these pictures, I don't know if they were from Arizona, but places in the Midwest where farmers, dairy farmers in places like Wisconsin, back in my home area of Illinois and Wisconsin, having to dump thousands of gallons of milk. It just seems like such a darn shame when you see that this couldn't go to help people.
Oh, it's horrible, and particularly when you see there's people that are in need. At the same time that people are in the need for these kind of products, we can't get the markets, we can't get the route to them. And then the farmers have to dump these products, literally milk in this case, because the prices are dropped out because the market's pretty much shrunk up. And there's a huge supply, so it's classic supply and demand economics. And those folks are really suffering back, particularly in the Midwest. And on top of that, their commodity prices are down for what they have had in the bins. And it's planting season, so people have to go out and try to, you know, put the capital out into a new crop for the 2020 crop. And that's been going on here this spring. And it's a tough situation for farmers. They're having to basically take capital out of their operations or borrow the money to further extend themselves, sometimes in debt, quite often, by the way, and extend themselves out on the hope that things will recover soon. But they don't have much elasticity in those operations.
And then we're hearing about this shortage of meat. What is that all about?
Well, that's primarily driven by the plants that have the processing plants that have had to shut down in a lot of cases because they have a lot of workers there that operate in close proximity to one another. And, you know, that's a good question, Bill, because we see these reports about how there's high numbers of workers in some of these plants that test positive, they say, you know, quote unquote, test positive. Well, I don't know. And this is a question. So I'm going to, first of all, say to everybody here openly, I don't know. But those of us in the ag business look at that and realize if you look at the data from the disease, the COVID-19 disease, there's a lot of other factors that are associated with what does it mean to test positive? What are the age of these workers? And are they testing positive because they already have the antibody? Does it mean they've already had it? Or are they actively sick? Are they symptomatic and sick? And or do they have any way of spacing them out or changing operations in those plants? In a lot of cases, just because they're trying to protect the public and it's a strong, urgent reaction, when there is an identification of an existence of that kind of, say, disease in the population and the workers, they shut the plant down. That plant shuts down, it cuts off the processing for that meat that comes to us in the marketplace, and the scarcities increase. And, of course, what we're likely to see down the road is increases in prices from that. Does that help you answer that question, Bill? It's kind of complex in a way. But.
Yeah, and I'm worried also about a lot of the supply for the worker shortage. I know that California's had up in the Bay Area and Salinas area a big shortage for the strawberry. This is strawberry season, the picking season. How about Arizona? Is that shortage applying to Arizona?
It is, yes. And but we're not in our major like produce season right now. It's melon season. There's melon harvest is going on primarily in central and southwest Arizona. There are some crops still in Arizona that require, you know, a lot of hand labor. That's the big demand in Arizona comes during our winter production season from October, really September, all through March. And so we were coming down to the end of our big demand season for that kind of labor when all this really hit. But yes, in answer to your question directly, it is impacting growers here, but you really see it in places like California. And you know what's happening there to a large extent in the winter production season that we have in the low desert, primarily in the lower Colorado River Valley for all the leafy green vegetable production. That same industry picks up and transfers to the Huron Valley of the northern part of the San Joaquin area, of the Central Valleys of California. And then over to the coast right now, which is in the Salinas Valley. And it's the same industry. The same crops are being produced. So you and I and all the consumers, we see the same products coming into our stores from the same companies, but they move their production systems in relation to the weather and the climate from the lower Colorado River Valley, the deserts in the winter, into the certain parts of the Central Valleys of California, then over to the coast in Salinas, where they are right now. And that's where the big impact is happening with regard to scarcity of workers. That's oftentimes the same workers that are migrating and moving with the crops there as well. So in other parts of the country, same thing. It goes to show us how dependent a lot of our ag industries are, a lot of industries are on that type of labor. So it is serious, Bill.
The livestock industry in Arizona, we have the crop and livestock prices falling partly because, you know, you've got schools that have been closed, the restaurants no longer buying meat. I'm wondering if these cattle operators are bringing animals to slaughter perhaps early, or could you give us kind of an overview on that in Arizona?
You know, some are. It kind of depends on the state of the crop or the herds. In Arizona, of course, it's a live cattle market, the live cattle industry that we have, particularly out on the range. And one of the things that's, of course, impacting the numbers of cattle in the range right now, of course, would be range conditions. And some folks are reducing those herds just because it is getting drier. In some parts of the country, in Arizona, there's being a diminished quality of range. I was just looking the other day, and they're moving now to hay stocks to feed the cattle in a lot of places. And hay supplies are critical to take a look at in terms of can you maintain cattle under conditions where the market drops off or the range conditions drop out. So a lot of ranchers are looking for hay this time of year. And their hay supplies right here in the desert, southwest Arizona, California, are pretty good right now. So they can sustain and hold some of those cattle herds on the range. where it's really tough, you look at it's interesting. New Mexico is way down on their hay supplies, Texas. And I think it is, well, I believe it's somewhere on the plains like western Kansas, Colorado, or Oklahoma. So that would mean there'd be an increasing demand on hay stocks out here. And so when that happens, then the farmers and ranchers try to keep those cattle on the range rather than take them out to market and finish them and take them to market. They hold on and they try to find hay stocks to support them, or they take it to market faster. And sometimes they're just forced to because that's where those cattle are right now. Particularly if they're in the feedlot, they've got to move them on out to market pretty soon.
All right, we're going to pause right here with Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture, Dr. Silvertooth from the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. We'll pause on the Buckmaster Show midweek edition. Take a break right here. Listen to our great sponsors. Please support them. We'll be right back. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. When you are ready to take a road trip, a lot of people with cabin fever these days, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico would make an excellent getaway. It's only about a three-hour drive to a beautiful area of the southwest portion of the Land of Enchantment, and there's plenty of room for social distancing in the Gila National Wilderness. Or north of Silver City, if you have not visited the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, this is a wonderful experience. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for places to stay and things to do. And did I mention it's cooler over there? Like at least 10 degrees cooler because of the elevation. Dr. Jeff Silvertooth with us now, the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture, Professor Silvertooth with the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. I see that the 4-H students, the 4-H members, and Dr. Silvertooth have gotten very creative during all of this pandemic by going virtual. Tell us about it.
Well, they have. They've done several things. Matter of fact, I might just put a plug in for them right now. They're going through an Arizona 4-H summit with a program that took place last night. There was an awards program, all done virtually this year. Very well done, very well attended. And it was a really nice experience. So it was something very new, but they've adapted and changed, and that's a great example of that, still engaging youth around the state through this, and the parents, the families, and the volunteers as well. And then tonight they have a ball, what they call the Clover Ball, representing from the 4-H Clover. And it's taking place this evening with a special guest speaker that they previewed a little bit last night. But, you know, that serves as a great example of what's transitioned in 4-H and really all of our programs, from agriculture, natural resources, to the family consumer health science programs and 4-H. It's been really impressive, Bill, positively impressive, how the people in our organization have responded and changed methods, what we call modalities and methods of delivery, very different than anything traditionally done in the past. They've done so quickly, done so effectively, and then in addition to that, the folks who work within the state have responded very well to that. So it's amazing what we're hearing a lot of times back now is to keep that going. You know, we need more of that in the future, and probably what we'll do when we go back to some kind of quote-unquote normal is maintain a hybrid structure with some things, you know, Bill, we probably should have done several years ago. This kind of gave us the stimulus to do it. But those folks, and you mentioned 4-H, have done a nice job of responding to that in a very positive way.
Is the Arizona Cooperative Extension available to the residents of Pima County in Arizona to help people who want to start some kind of like a vegetable garden to perhaps, for economic reasons, start growing their own food?
Absolutely. Every extension office, which we have, let me put it this way, we have extension offices from the University of Arizona in every county in the state, including Pima County. And we are indeed ready, available, and quite willing to work with anyone in the public. This is a classic equal opportunity organization. We're here to serve everyone in the community, Bill, equitably and directly. And here in Pima County, our office is up on North Campbell. You can access that very easily through the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension website, and we can get you hooked in with those folks. We have an excellent master gardener and horticulture program taking place here. So direct answer to your question, absolutely yes. We welcome that and encourage that.
How does someone get a hold of the folks?
You can either call, you can send them a note through their website, or you can drive in there right now. There's still some people around, but right now we're kind of pretty light in our personnel that are on site. So best thing to do would be call. Just call the office directly or just send them an email through the, you can find those, whoever you want to contact, a whole list of personnel is listed on our website for each county office. So if you want to contact someone in 4-H, for example, you can find the 4-H agents and the 4-H personnel in that website, in that directory, or the horticulture, or anything else the person might, cooking, food and nutrition information. A lot of people have been doing a lot of cooking at home.
And yep, they are.
and we're seeing a lot of demand for that kind of information, you know, about what's the nutritional value of these kinds of food recipes, and information about gardening, et cetera. So we've seen quite a lot of an increase in demand from that, and the website's the best way to go. Another example, Bill, where our personnel, I'm proud of what they've done, have put a lot of energy into enhancing our capacity to give information to people through the web, under these times particularly.
Are you about ready now to start hitting the road in that wonderful truck of yours where you put on thousands of miles, Jeff Silvertooth, visiting the four corners of Arizona? How has this affected your schedule? You're kind of an out-and-about guy. You've practically been living in that truck before all this happened.
Yeah, you know, I've lived a pretty nomadic life. It's really been dramatic for me, Bill. It has been for a lot of us, but for myself, for sure. It feels weird. And, you know, I've been really working in my home office every day for the past, 11 weeks now, 12 weeks. And I'm about ready to get out, but I've got to be careful in how we do this for several reasons. One is we don't really have the green light from university yet to open our offices and populate our offices and populate our programs with face-to-face programming yet. I have been out some for some meetings because irrespective of what the university is doing, industries and agencies in the state are going back to life and face-to-face operations. Agriculture, for example, doesn't stop. And so I've been getting out, but, you know, I'm so tied down with stuff that is bound to the desk now. It's been pretty crazy. And it feels weird. In many respects, a lot of us in situations like mine, that's a source of stress in itself. And you realize in 33 years of being here, I've never been so bound down like this ever before, which is true for a lot of us. And I'm trying to adapt to that as well. But you just can't. It's hard to stay in touch when you're staying in Tucson all the time. It honestly is. It's a real challenge in that respect.
We've been talking about a year ago, and actually I think we were talking about hemp production in Arizona on your visit early in the year before all of this broke in mid-March. Has this put a crimp in the hemp growers?
Not really. You know, what's put a crimp in the hemp production has really changed from a year ago, and we really predicted this, and it's kind of trial and error and people learning from last year, trying to get some hemp crops out into the field, industrial commercial hemp into the fields of Arizona. And they had a lot of experiences. So there was there's kind of some train wrecks that took place last summer, but just people were just crashing into it, just trying to figure it out on the run. And so they refined that a little bit. So you don't see as much going out. You see a more, I say, cautious, careful, like premeditated approach to putting the hemp out this year. There's variety tests that we have out. We're more actively engaged. And I see it particularly in Southwest Arizona, Central Arizona, but Southwest Arizona is probably where we have some of the greatest interest. And there are variety tests out, and the plantings that are going out are a little more seriously premeditated. So it's quickly evolving. I don't know what the acreage is right now, Bill, but it is. There's still an interest, and there's still interest in increasing the capacity in Arizona. But we're 1 year down the road from where we were where this thing first began last year, and it was a real erratic, kind of a hectic start a year ago.
I've only got about a minute left, Jeff. As far as the one of Arizona's primary crops, cotton, has COVID affected the planting season?
It's not so much COVID-related, it's market-related. The cotton markets are way down. And so this is cotton planting season in Arizona from February, March up to about right now until the end of May. And prices are only like 60 cents a pound, and prices of production haven't gone down, and the acreage has gone down in Arizona significantly, but it hasn't been COVID related so much. It still could be, but not right now. It's basically market driven, which we're on the international market. That's just supply and demand again.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me how everything when it comes to the marketplace is so interconnected. When you say cotton demand would be down, yeah, it makes sense. People are staying at home. They're not buying a lot of extra clothing and
That's
things.
True.
And
That's
it just,
true.
It all ripples down. Everything's so interconnected. Jeff Silvertooth, we will look forward to having you here in studio as we gradually reopen our studios here. Meantime, it's been a pleasure having you on the phone. Thank you, Jeff.
Bill, thank you for having me, and I look forward to seeing you in person again soon. You take care. Thank you.
There you go. Thanks a lot. Jeff Silvertooth from the University of Arizona. And that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Thanks, John Couch, for engineering and producing my program today. We've got Dave Ramsey coming up next with his very popular show talking about money. Have a great afternoon.